it would not have even crossed my mind that I could spend a half an hour talking about water quality. Is water important to cattle? Yes, that'd be the end of it. But what a learning curve it's been for me since I've been in South Dakota and worked in this region in Wyoming and Montana, South Dakota, eastern Colorado, to see how critical of an issue this water quality can be. And so as we go through this today, I think you'll see that sometimes I think we take water quality for granted. Issues in terms of water quantity are easy to appreciate. I mean, there's no question, you can't overemphasize the importance of a well-watered ranch and having water in quantity and having it available. But what about the quality? And surely you know if you have some horrible problems that are killing animals, but what about the subacute problems? Are you aware of that? And how many of you have tested your water? Dan Gould in 2002 published a review where they took some 498 water samples from subsurface water, from well water, throughout the country, 23 different states. 6% of those had sulfates greater than 1,000 parts per million. But 50% of those high sulfate samples were from this region, basically, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas. And surely we've documented those same kinds of problems in Colorado and Wyoming, eastern Montana. They really exist. I'll tell you a bit of a story. This is a picture of a stock dam from north of Wall, South Dakota, which is east of us in Rapid City. This picture is taken in May of 2002, but let me back up before we took this photograph to 2001. In May of 2001, this particular stock dam had a sulfate content of 3,000 parts per million, pretty high. By the end of 2001, it was at 4,600 parts per million sulfates. We went over the winter then to 2002 to where you see this photograph in May of 2002, and it increased just a little bit over the winter, about 4,800. And then the drought set in 2002. So we're setting at 4,800. Now look at this picture and then look at the same photo at the end of that summer, not even the end of the summer, in July 17th. When this photo was taken, this stock dam was over 10,000 parts per million in sulfates. We tested this the other day. And Roger talked earlier about drought and is it over. We tested this stock dam just the other day, and it was over 20,000 parts per million in sulfates. Just tremendous changes, and this water's not been recharged. And so it's not only surface water, it's subsurface water, but surely this drought is impacting these surface water sources and condensing the salts in those. I've had ranchers in South Dakota tell me that we've seen a lot of years in our lifetime where we were short on feed, and we've seen years when we were short on water, but we haven't seen very many years where we're short on both. And last year surely was that situation. A little bit of terminology so you know what we're talking about in regards to water quality. Total dissolved solids is an indicator of the total salt level. You'll see that if you have a livestock suitability test. You'll have a TDS number. And those could be salts of sodium, chloride, calcium, magnesium, sulfur, and so on. So the question is the salt content of the water important, or is there a particular salt in there that's more problematic than others? We've been talking about the sulfate some, and if you go back in the early 70s, there was some work in Nevada where they took a set of heifers they were growing and added sodium sulfate to a rural water source or a good water source to one group, and then sodium chloride, or table salt, to the other. When they added the sodium sulfate to the water, water consumption, feed consumption were both reduced significantly, and then weight loss was increased. When they added the sodium chloride, they didn't get that response. So what that indicates is wow, maybe these sulfates are a big part of the problem, and surely from the samples that we've collected, we think that's surely possible. Our field observations over the last few years have shown tremendously high sulfate levels, and they usually make up about 64% of the total dissolved solids. What that means is that most of the salt in there is sodium sulfate. Recent work in Colorado has shown, actually, a summary out of researchers in Colorado. They went up into South Dakota and tested water. And they found that in a lot of situations, a lot of ranches throughout South Dakota, just looking at the subsurface water, not even taking into account surface water, there were a lot of situations where sulfur was above the maximum tolerable level. There's no question there's a requirement for sulfur. Rumen microorganisms have a requirement for sulfur, and NRC lists that at about 0.15% of dry matter. The NRC lists the maximum tolerable level of sulfur at 0.4%. Does 0.4% kill cattle? Well, let's go through some data and see what that does to performance and so forth. I think there's three ways that I can outline for you today that water quality can decrease the performance of cattle and health. One is reduce water and feed consumption. Water and feed consumption are tied together closely. If water intake goes down because the stuff tastes nasty, feed intake is going to go down. If feed intake goes down, performance is going to go down. I'll show you some other data that indicates that perhaps even independent of water, when the sulfur is added from the diet, you can get some reductions in intake that way. The second way, besides just the reduction in water intake, is cattle can ingest toxic sulfur levels. And finally, the sulfur in the water can induce copper deficiencies. Let's go through those a little bit. Water intake is driven, and water intake and water requirement, you can really use those synonymous. They're driven by a lot of different things, mainly those size, physiological state of the animal. By that we mean, is the animal gestating or is it lactating? Temperature is a big one. I'll show you that. Salt intake. If salt intake in the feed is high, water requirements when water intake goes up. If salts are high in the water, I'll show you today that water intake is going to go down. Dry matter intake is another big one. Look at this chart right out of the NRC that shows the impacts of temperature on water intake in cattle as temperature in degrees Fahrenheit goes from 40 to 90 degrees. An exponential increase in the water requirement of cattle during that period of time. So what that means is, when you're really worried about these water quality problems, is out there on the right side of that graph when it's hot. I mean, that doesn't mean you can't have problems otherwise, but the negative effect of having low water intake is going to be greater when they require more water. And also, if their water intake is driven up by temperature, if these salts of sulfur in there, these sulfate salts are in there, you realize a situation where you can get toxic sulfur levels. This is some data out of eastern Colorado on finishing cattle, and notice the average daily gains on the left. Quite high. These cattle were on a finishing ration, and they were supplied water with various levels of sulfate shown across the x-axis, 125 to 2,000. When they got up to about 500 sulfates, water intake decreased. Does that mean performance decreased? Well, if you look at the performance data, even though that water intake decreased, they really didn't get a marked reduction in performance until they got out there on the end. Out there about 2,000 sulfates is where they had that reduction. Surely it did reduce performance at that level. Sulfur toxicity, my second point about toxic sulfur levels. So for a long time, it's been known that sulfur can be antagonistic to thymine and can destroy thymine in the rumen. And a thymine deficiency has been associated with the metabolic disease polioencephalomalacia. Polio, PEM, Brainers, you can call it a number of different things. And veterinarians for a long time have thought, and many still do, that this thymine deficiency is induced by sulfur and causes these polio problems. The reason that they believe that is that when you give an animal thymine via injection that's in the early stages of polio, you can pull them out of it. And so that's led many to think that, okay, it's a thymine deficiency. Some more recent evidence, though, has suggested that this polioencephalomalacia can be caused by hydrogen sulfide toxicity. When this sulfur enters the rumen bugs reduce it to hydrogen sulfide. The animals can eructate that and then inhale it. Hydrogen sulfide disrupts cells in the brain and causes the necrotic lesions characterizing polio. Regardless of the mechanism, and it is possible there's more than one mechanism, and that thymine deficiency can play a role. The disease is very serious. Work by Lana Reagan and others, again in Colorado at the CSU Vet School, showed that dietary sulfur levels of 0.9% have been associated with PEM. A little bit about this disease. These are some photographs we've taken from our research studies. This is a steer that's showing early signs of polio. You start seeing the animal being lethargic, it goes off feed. You see the ears drooped. You might diagnose this early on as BRD. I mean, it doesn't look that different if you're lucky enough to see it at this stage and be able to diagnose it. As the disease advances, you start seeing neurological problems. This animal is exhibiting a phenomenon we call stargazing. Basically sitting there with his head tilted back. The animal at this point is blind. You'll see him exhibiting blind staggers and have incoordination problems. Look at this. This animal, as this disease progressed, this animal began experiencing what we're calling here head pressing. And when the brain is infected, when you get these lesions in the brain, there's swelling in the cerebrum. It presses on the optic nerve, which causes the blindness. But you can only imagine the headache that it causes. And these cattle will sit there and press on things. This animal will sit there for hours pressing into the side of this calving shed. And finally, it'll knock them down. And unfortunately, you find them like this too often. This animal's pressed through the fence already, and we treated this animal, and he didn't respond. He died shortly after. And I think a lot of times, there's a lot of situations where unexplained deaths are caused by this. Because if you're not watching them pretty close, this can come on really quick. Here's some data out of California where they added sulfur to the diet. From ammonium sulfate. And look at the dietary sulfur levels of 0.15 up to 0.25, average daily gain on the y-axis. Gain was reduced when dietary sulfur was up to 0.25. Man, we can't get dietary sulfur under 0.25 in South Dakota. I mean, that's just almost impossible. So there may be some subacute effects of the sulfur, is what these data are indicating. Causing reductions in performance and intake and so forth. A little bit on the copper. We could spend an entire afternoon talking about copper nutrition, and Dr. Wright is going to visit with you next in regards to minerals, but it is extremely important to mention this at this point. When this sulfate enters the rumen, you see on the left the sulfates, the rumen reduces that to sulfide in the middle. In the presence of the mineral molybdenum, that sulfide combines with the molybdenum to form one of a few different isomers of thiomolybdate. This thiomolybdate will bind copper and basically render it unavailable. It makes a very serious situation in terms of keeping the copper nutrition adequate in the animals. The impacts of poor copper status include impaired immune function, calf scours, calf death loss, and impaired reproduction. These are more long-term. These aren't the things you see over necessarily one little study during the summer, but are more long-term effects. I think sulfates greater than 300 ppm or parts per million in the water can cause this. We embarked in 2001 on a series of research trials to evaluate the impacts of this high salt water on animal performance. We used in 2001 a set of steers. Yearling steers during the summertime were put on a growing ration, kind of a slow grow ration, hay and wheat mids. And then we hauled water to those pens of cattle from various sources. One group of cattle got water that was from our rural water system. It's about 400 sulfates in our rural water system. The next group of cattle received water that was from a well on our research station, about 3,100 sulfates in that well. Another group of calves received water that we hauled out of a stock dam. Now, that stock dam early in the summer was about 3,000 sulfates, similar to our well water, but was about 4,600 by the end of the summer. So it changed. There was a range we were working with there. Look what this did to water intake. As sulfates went in the water went up, water intake went down, except it did not get worse as we went from 3,100 to 3,900. Remember, in that last treatment, it's just an average. But we did reduce water intake. And what's going to happen if you reduce water intake? I told you already, you expect reductions in feed intake. And indeed, we found that. Feed intake was reduced as sulfates went from 400 to 3,100 in the water. Average daily gain of these calves was reduced by about 0.4 of a pound a day as we went from the 400 to 3,100 sulfates. Significant reductions in gain of the calves. Here's what surprised us a little bit, though. This is the health data. The maroon bars represent morbidity or the incidence of sickness. The blue bars represent mortality or death loss. And the gray bars represent polio. Absolutely no sickness in the low sulfate group, but average between the other two treatments with sulfates in it, about a 13% incidence of polioencephalomalacia. 5% of the cattle in those treatments died from that disease. We were not able to save them. Here's the sulfur intakes. If you look at it on a dietary basis, percent of dry matter, 0.27 in our controls, 0.74 in the 3,100 group, and then on up to 0.93. So we were able to demonstrate polio at 0.7. We embarked again in 2002 to further this research effort to continue to evaluate different levels. And what we did this time is we created consistent levels by taking these water sources I've been describing to you and mixing them to form various sulfate concentrations. Here's what we found. If you see on the x-axis is water sulfates from 400, 1700, 2900, and 4600. Water intake declined linearly as sulfates in the water increase. Tremendous reduction. And look out there at the end, just those cattle just fell apart in terms of their water intake. In this situation, that 4600 stayed constant. There was a range around it, but it was bouncing around that 4600. This is what it did to dry matter intake. Just like that data from Colorado I showed you, the reduction in intake was not correlated exactly with the first reduction that you saw in water intake. But indeed, as that got bad enough, you reached the threshold, dry matter intake went down. When we got up to that 2900 level, you started seeing a reduction, and then those on the high level fell apart. Look at the gain. Over a pound a day difference in average daily gain of these calves as we went from the 400 to the 4600. So significant gain reductions. Here's the health this year. Basically no health problems in any of the treatments until we got up to the 4600. Almost half of those calves showed clinical signs of polio, and a third of them died from that disease. Tremendous problems. We didn't see the impact at that 2900 level. You know, in our previous data, 3100 caused some problems. We saw the performance reductions, but we didn't see the clinical polio at that level in these confined cattle. These are the dietary sulfur levels ranging from 0.26% in the controls, well over 1% of dry matter dietary sulfur in that high sulfate treatment. This graph is important for one reason. All this is a regression of dry matter intake on water intake. And what you see at the point where intake really starts to be reduced is at that level when water intake got down to 12 gallons. Well, what's important about that is that's the point where water was at about 3,000 sulfates. And so we think that the critical level in confined cattle, for sure, is at this 3,000 level when you start having some tremendous problems in performance and health. We also looked at the impact of this water on foraging cattle. These data represent a set of yearling steers that we ran on grass from May to September at our Cottonwood Research Station near Phillips, South Dakota. They got water that was 400 or 3,900. There was about a 0.2 of a pound per day reduction in gain. Significant? Yes. As much as we saw in the feedlot with the growing calves? No. This is the pasture data from stocker cattle in 2002. We had a drought in 2002, as we already mentioned. These cattle ran out of grass about the middle of July, and so they were removed from pastures. Since they were only on grass for about 60 days, their gains were really good. Those calves almost did 2.5 pounds a day. But look at the impact of that high salt water that year. It was 4,600 consistently reduced by 0.6 of a pound per day. That could have pretty dramatic impacts on your bottom line. Well, one of the things that we look at these data with yearling cattle, and we like to use yearling cattle for research because they're a sensitive model, and it's hard to do this work with cow-calf. pairs and so forth. They're harder to handle, harder to get replication. But we decided we had to try it because doesn't it make sense? If you're reducing water intake, and we've shown that these sulfates will do that, what do you think is going to happen? Well, you're going to reduce milk production, wouldn't you? And if milk production's reduced, there's a pretty good chance that your weaning weights are going to be lower. So we took off on a study with cow-calf pairs, and we compared it during the summertime with April and May calving cows. One group got this rural water that was around 400 sulfates, and another group got water that averaged 2,600. In this case, we added sodium sulfate to the rural water. We weren't quite as good at that as we thought we would be. And so there was a range there, and I want to tell you that because that's important. That range was from about 1,900 to 3,000, so we didn't hit 2,600 every time. That was the average number, though. The maroon bars show the on weights of cows on each treatment. The blue bars, the off weights. Bottom line is those cows that were on the 390 sulfate water gained 10 pounds. Those that were on the high sulfate water lost 36 pounds over the course of the summer. If you look at body condition score, it was not significantly different. The difference in condition score loss between the two treatments was not significantly different, although the weight loss was. Look at this, though. This really surprised us. Calf average daily gain was not at all different between the two treatments. And we did some milk production work and looked at milk production in the cows. We were not able to pick up a difference in milk production between the two sets of cows either. One of the things that this brings out is there's a few points. One is that these cow-calf pairs on range may not be quite as sensitive to the sulfates as those calves, especially the calves in the growing lot. We showed you the marked reductions in stocker calves. Well, what's different? Well, let's talk about the difference in range cattle and dry lot cattle or confined cattle. One of the big differences is surface temperature. On these 102 degree days, the surface temperature in that feedlot can get up to 140 degrees. We don't see that on the rangeland where there's a fair amount of vegetation. And so those animals in the feedlot experience more heat stress. I think this water issue is absolutely critical to confined cattle. I think it's very, very important to range cattle too, but they may not be quite as sensitive to it. The other thing is we were feeding a dry ration in the feedlot, and that range forage does contain some moisture, so they're able to derive some water from the forage itself. I don't want to leave you by any means with a message that water with over 2,000 sulfates in it is not detrimental to range cattle. A couple reasons. I've seen it anecdotally in South Dakota, but at least at this level, we didn't get the pronounced reductions. I think there's probably a threshold those cattle will reach. We're going to continue our research program. Don Boggs, my department head, is about to string me up for killing cattle with polio, so I got to kind of tiptoe through this, but at least the 2600 level wasn't critical. But the other point that's important is we've not even talked about the mineral issue here. This sulfate level is high enough, specifically since we know we have some molybdenum in the forage, to cause some tremendous copper problems. This was a very short-term study. We didn't see any difference in conception rates this year. Wouldn't expect to. These effects of poor nutrition are a little longer in time in terms of the response. So here's our summary. This is in the proceedings. We've modified some of the previously published guidelines based on sulfate using our research data and our observations. I think when you get water up to 500 to 1,500, I start worrying about the minerals quite a bit at that situation, but I don't think that you're going to have terrible effects on the cattle, and you're probably not going to see a lot of polio, especially in range cattle. 1,500 to 3,000, I think you can start expecting reductions in performance of confined cattle. This could be really important to your weaning program, so watch when you're weaning calves and check that water there. And some marginal effects on pasture. We documented that with the yearling cattle. When you get to over 3,000, I think this water's poor. And regardless of what type of cattle the situation, I'd consider that poor water likely to see some sporadic cases of polio. Greater than 4,000 is dangerous. I wanted to go just make a couple of comments in regards to what do you do? Yeah, people say, Trey, this is good stuff, but what do we do about it? I think one of the first things is awareness. Where are you at, and can you manage around it? For instance, if I have a surface water source that's in that marginal category early in the summertime, perhaps I would want to use that before it gets poor, if it's necessary that I use that pasture. Because chances are, in our climate, it's going to get worse over the summer. So build it into your grazing management plan. Also, if I have well water, I need to know where that is and time my usage of that well water. Be careful using it on calves. That's where a lot of people have this well water, is back at their dry lot where they're weaning calves and growing calves and so forth. Look for ways to reduce heat stress on the cattle. Place they can get in shade, they can get down under trees and so forth, I think has a dramatic impact on that. You can mix it. We demonstrated you could dilute it out and it works fine. And then finally, you can develop water. That's the expensive part. What I think is that our data will allow you to do, though, is start putting some numbers on the performance reduction so you know how much you can afford to pay for the water development. You can use that on lower producing stock, although I don't know many ranches that consider any of their stock low producing. And so I don't know if I like that recommendation as much. But it is important to say you don't want to use your poorest water when the requirements are the highest, pre-calving, and you got lactating cows and so forth. And pay attention to sulfur and other feeds. Dr. Razzi mentioned these byproduct feeds, they can have a fair bit of sulfur in it. Pay attention to that. Let me show you one piece of data from a trial that I had a graduate student working on this last summer, where we took a set of calves and gave them rural water, shown on the left there, or water with about 4,000 sulfates in it, supplemented one group with thiamine, 1 gram of thiamine, and another group with no thiamine. And look what happened to gain. Those cattle that were fed thiamine, their performance was intermediate to the rural water and the non-thiamine supplemented group. Interesting. We saw more polio in the group that was not supplemented with thiamine, but we did document some polio in that thiamine group, so we were not able to alleviate it. And it's interesting that performance, though, was this different. Even if we took the calves that were diagnosed with polio out, there was still a difference in performance. Were we supplementing a thiamine deficiency? I don't know. Or were we over thiamine therapeutic to subclinical effects of the sulfur? Bottom line is know your water and develop a plan. If you're forced to use poor water, be aware of the impacts. Have it work with your veterinarian to have a polio treatment plan. We usually use an anti-inflammatory and injection of thiamine hydrochloride. And by all means, work with a nutritionist to have a strong mineral program. Your typical conventional mineral programs are simply not adequate in these situations. And I'll leave you with a closing thought to not turn your back on water quality. Thank you.
Thank you, Trey, for an excellent presentation. You know, for an old guy like myself and even an older guy like Lynn Woodard sitting down here, it's exciting to have these young people who are just starting their careers on the cutting edge in some of this technology. I would certainly think that our next speaker falls into that category as well. Another one of the young guns.